Jean Guerrero is Los Angeles Times columnist. Her latest column, Gavin Newsom's been one of the most pro-Latino governors in California history, and he's under attack for it. She's author of Hate Monger, Stephen Miller, Donald Trump, and the White Nationalist Agenda. It's out in paperback this week. That does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is produced with Renee Fels, Mike Park, Dina Guzder, Messiah Reds, Nermeen Sheikh, Maria Terracena, Tammy Warnoff, Tarina Nadura, Sam Alkoff, Tamer Astudio, John Hamilton, Robbie Karen, Hani Masood, and Adriana Contreras. Our general manager is Julie Crosby. Special thanks to Becca Staley. I'm Amy Goodman. Stay safe. Wear a mask.
This is Judy Berry from Earth First, and when I'm in Portland, I listen to non-commercial community radio, KBOO, Portland. No compromise in defense of the truth.
Hi, I'm Andrew Geller, host of Unbroken Chain, music of the Grateful Dead and Friends, noon to 2, the third Saturday of every month. Throughout August, we're bringing you special episodes of our program to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the show. And KBOO is raising money for a new Studio Transmitter Link, or STL, to bring sound to listeners. Tune in Saturdays, noon to 2, and text GDAF to 44321, or go to kboo.fm/grateful to contribute to this one-time campaign. Thank you for your support for Grateful Dead and Friends and KBOO Community Radio.
Connect with your favorite community radio station on social media.
Our Facebook page is facebook.com/KBOOMradio.
And follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/KBOO.
We also have a YouTube channel at youtube.com/KBOO radio.
We also provide content to the free music archive.
An interactive library of high-quality legal audio downloads.
That's at freemusicarchive.org/curator/KBOO.
You can find all of this and more on the KBOO website, kboo.fm.
Thanks for listening.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on the KBOO Evening News, Oregon is on track to reach nearly 1,200 COVID hospitalizations by Labor Day weekend. Lloyd Center will reopen Monday after closing due to an electrical fire. And new research identifies unprotected rivers in Oregon that are critical drinking sources or habitats for at-risk species. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 27th, 2021. I'm Sam Bowman. The outdoor mask mandate for Oregon went back into effect today, meaning all people, regardless of vaccination status, must wear a mask outside in public unless they can keep physical distance. This includes outdoor gatherings and events. A press release from Governor Kate Brown's office said the rule does not apply to so-called fleeting encounters, such as two people walking past one another on a trail or in a park. This is the first reinstated outdoor mask mandate in the U.S. since the Delta variant resulted in a surge of COVID-19 cases. Brown said, quote, "The Delta variant is spreading fast and wide, throwing our state into a level of crisis we have not yet seen in the pandemic. Cases and hospitalizations are at a record high. Masks are a quick and simple tool we can immediately deploy to protect ourselves and our families and quickly help stop further spread of COVID-19. End quote. According to research from Oregon Health and Science University, the state is on track for nearly 1,200 COVID hospitalizations by the start of Labor Day weekend, up from previous projections. Oregon's health system is under severe strain, with 45% of intensive care units occupied by COVID-19 patients. When patients with other illnesses are included, 92% of Oregon's ICU beds are in use. On Thursday, the Oregon Health Authority reported that 1,085 people are hospitalized in Oregon with COVID-19, breaking another all-time record during the pandemic. OHA also noted an increase in hospitalizations among pediatric cases. Breakthrough cases, which is when a vaccinated person gets COVID, accounted for about 12% of cases last week. In total, about 5.5% of all vaccine breakthrough cases have been hospitalized, and 0.9% have died. A website from the Washington State Labor Council offers information to union members in the state about COVID-19 vaccines, with the aim of providing a trusted source of information on the shot. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story with the Public News Service.
Accurate information about the COVID-19 vaccine can be elusive. That's why the Washington State Labor Council says it has set up a website to answer people's questions. According to David Groves with the council, there has been some hesitancy among union members, though not of the conspiracy theory variety found on some corners of the internet. He says one of the main concerns was how quickly the vaccine was approved.
We wanted to do some education about what the shots are, how they work, why they've been declared safe for emergency use. And since then, we've just been building it out with more and more information as different issues come up.
Groves also notes there's been hesitancy in Black, Indigenous, and other communities of color, mainly because of the unequal health outcomes for people in these groups. The Washington State Labor Council's website includes information resources for BIPOC members, as well as a vaccine locator and firsthand stories from union members who have received the vaccine. As Washington State and employers mandate the vaccine, Groves believes it's important for unions to play a role in how these mandates are implemented. He says the process for exemptions, such as for medical reasons, isn't clear yet, and that others might need paid time off to get the shot.
When unions are saying, no, you have to bargain over this, we're not saying you have to bargain over whether a mandate exists. We're trying to bargain over the effects of the mandate and how it affects our members.
AFT Washington is among the unions reassuring its members that it will be bargaining locally on the impacts of a vaccine mandate. Grove says most of their members have already been vaccinated and feel strongly about working alongside people who also are protected.
One of the key things that unions fight for is workplace safety. And this is absolutely a workplace safety issue in addition to being a public safety issue.
This month, Governor Jay Inslee announced a vaccine mandate affecting about 60,000 state employees, 400,000 healthcare providers, and most education and childcare workers, many of whom are union members. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
The Lloyd Center Shopping Mall, shut down by an electrical fire, will reopen to the public at 11 a.m. on Monday, August 30th. Its iconic ice skating rink will stay closed through Sunday, September 5th. Heavy smoke from a two-alarm electrical fire on Friday, August 6th, led to an evacuation and subsequent closure of the mall. The fire started in a generator room and was extinguished by sprinklers. The extent of damage and cause of the fire have not been released. There were no injuries reported. Pacific Power and Lloyd Center staff have been working on repairs following the fire. Ann Grimmer, mall marketing director, commented that the repair effort is a testament to Lloyd's continued longevity in Portland. The amount and type of repairs required also have not been divulged. The fire and brief closure represent further setbacks for the mall. Several major chains have closed stores there, including Nordstrom, Sears, Macy's, and Marshall's. Many remaining businesses were struggling related to pandemic restrictions. Some had been hoping for August shopping to pick up related to back-to-school purchases. Potential plans to repurpose the mall as an entertainment destination have not clearly been acted upon. Faith Jennings, owner of the gift shop Animal Plant Mineral, hopes Portland residents will support businesses and workers when the mall reopens. She said, quote, "Hopefully, this will also draw attention to Lloyd Center and people will come back to shop once it reopens," end quote. New research identifies unprotected rivers in Oregon that it says are critical drinking sources and/or habitat for at-risk species. Currently, only about 2% of Oregon's rivers have the highest levels of federal protections. Eric Tegedoff has more on the story with the Public News Service.
A new report identifies some of the most ecologically important rivers in Oregon. Conservation Science Partners looked at 54,000 miles of unprotected rivers and streams in Oregon. It highlights watersheds with outstanding water quality, recreational value, and that support rare or at-risk species. More than 5,700 river miles were in the range of at least 30 aquatic species of greatest conservation need. Caitlin Littlefield with Conservation Science Partners says many rivers are under threat as the climate warms, and a growing population places more demands on fresh water sources.
Despite that importance and those threats, though, there are very few rivers and streams that are currently protected from those increasing threats. And so this report strives to identify the best of the best river segments and key places to conserve across Oregon.
The report, commissioned by the Pew Charitable Trust, analyzes rivers for their potential for state outstanding national resource water or state wild and scenic river designation. Only about 2% of Oregon rivers have the highest federal protections as wild and scenic rivers. Oregon Senators Ron Wyden and Jeff Merkley introduced the River Democracy Act earlier this year, which would give nearly 4,700 miles of Oregon rivers wild and scenic protections. Michael Lalonde, president and CEO of Deschutes Brewery, says clean rivers are meaningful not only because they provide water for his brewery, but also to the residents of Central Oregon.
Most of us moved here to be outdoors, to do outdoor recreation, whether it's fishing, kayaking, and maintaining a healthy river system is important to those activities and really the attraction of Central Oregon for visitors.
Outdoor recreation is a $7.2 billion industry in Oregon, according to the Outdoor Industry Association. Littlefield says researchers also looked at how well rivers are able to maintain cool summer temperatures, which is critical as temperatures rise. For their size, she says rivers have an outsized number of benefits.
We cannot overestimate the importance of our freshwater systems to supporting not only us as humans, but also biodiversity and affording some degree of climate adaptation into the future if we think about maintaining these services.
Support for this reporting was provided by the Pew Charitable Trust. I'm Eric Tegedoff reporting.
An alleged hate crime in the town of Cold Spring has returned attention to long-standing racial divides in central Minnesota. A multiracial family says it was racial bias that motivated the man who harassed them for months before he drove a car into their house in July. With more on the story, it's Faven Garazgahar with the Racial Reckoning Project.
An alleged hate crime in a town called Cold Spring, 20 miles out of St. Cloud, has returned attention to racial divides in central Minnesota. A multiracial family says racial bias motivated the man that harassed them for months before he drove a car into their house in July. St. Cloud State University's Christopher Lehman says he was reminded of a St. Cloud incident in 1917, where a lynch mob drove a black man out of town for being in an interracial relationship.
What happened in Cold Spring could certainly happen as a sort of continuation of those feelings that have always been there among people and have just never been confronted or have been addressed by their families or by the city at large.
Part of this traces back to the town's early ties to slavery. Lehman authored the book Slavery's Reach, Southern Slaveholders in the North Star State. He says in the mid-1800s, central Minnesota was a destination for slaveholders looking to invest in real estate and escape summer heat. Lehman says of the times,
the slaveholders who are investing in Minnesota have political control over St. Cloud and over central Minnesota in general, so much so that central Minnesota becomes known as a political stronghold for the slaveholding class.
Lehman says that influence continued in the area as European immigrants adopted pro-South and pro-slavery politics long after Southerners departed. This worked to discourage black people from moving to St. Cloud for nearly half a century, until the 1960s when government institutions wanted to diversify the local workforce. According to Lehman, in recent years, central Minnesota has begun to address its past by creating a park named after the state's first slaves and by hosting community conversations. For the Racial Reckoning Project, I'm Faven Garazgahar.
Racial Reckoning, the Arc of Justice, is produced and supported by AMPERS, diverse radio for Minnesota's communities, in partnership with KMLJ Radio and the Minnesota Humanities Center. Online at racialreckoningmn.org.
listening to the KBOO Evening News. Stay tuned after this newscast for Counterspin, discussing the Afghanistan withdrawal with Phyllis Bennis, director of the New Internationalism Project at the Institute for Policy Studies, and from Matthew Ho, senior fellow with the Center for International Policy. Then at 6, it's Let's Talk About Race. At 6:30, it's Squirrels Know. And at 7, La Ruleta. Tonight's weather will be clear skies with a low of 57 degrees. Tomorrow will be sunny with a high of 86 degrees. Today in history, in 1883, the most powerful volcanic eruption in recorded history occurs on Krakatoa, a small, uninhabited volcanic island located west of Sumatra in Indonesia. Heard 3,000 miles away, the explosions threw 5 cubic miles of earth 50 miles into the air, created 120-foot tsunamis, and killed 36,000 people. The quote of the day is from American educator and author Booker T. Washington, who said, quote, "Success is to be measured not so much by the position that one has reached in life as by the obstacles which he has overcome while trying to succeed," end quote. President Biden vows to fight back after 13 service members are killed. Vice President Harris has tough words for China, and a massive voting rights march is slated for cities across the U.S. this weekend. With more on the story, it's Mary Scheuerman with 2021 Talks.
Welcome to 2021 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
We will not forgive. We will not forget. We will hunt you down and make you pay.
Strong words from President Joe Biden in response to the deadliest U.S. casualty event in Afghanistan in a decade. 13 U.S. military personnel and dozens of Afghan civilians were killed in bomb blasts outside Kabul airport. The attacks came as a report surfaced. U.S. officials gave the Taliban a list of names of Americans and allies to allow through the militant-controlled perimeter of the airport. When asked, Biden explained sometimes such scenarios occur to expedite an evacuation.
And to the best of my knowledge, in those cases, the bulk of that has occurred, they've been let through. But I can't tell you with any certitude that there's actually been a list of names. I know there may have been, but I know of no circumstance. It doesn't mean it didn't exist.
Head of the U.S. Central Command Marine Corps General Kenneth McKenzie said ISIS-K is behind the attacks and noted the threat level remains high.
While we're saddened by the loss of life, both U.S. and Afghan, we're continuing to execute the mission. Our mission is to evacuate U.S. citizens, third country nationals, special immigrant visa holders, U.S. Embassy staff, and Afghans at risk.
The August 31st deadline to withdraw all U.S. forces still stands. Vice President Kamala Harris is back in D.C. after her visit to Southeast Asia, where she cautioned the U.S. will not stay silent when China acts out against its neighbors.
We're going to speak up when there are actions that Beijing takes that threaten the rules-based international order. Again, such as activity in the South China Sea.
The goal of the trip to Singapore and Vietnam was to strengthen U.S. relations. Marches to fight against voter suppression will be held in dozens of cities from California to Maine tomorrow.
This is not a political issue. It's a moral issue.
Bishop James Dixon II with Push Democracy Forward will join other activists at the March on for Voting Rights in D.C. He says they're calling for federal voting rights legislation.
We can all agree that protecting the right to vote, protecting democracy is our central goal. If there's a way for us to get to mutually beneficial conclusions, that elevates justice, fairness, equity, and that preserves and promotes democracy.
August 28th marks the 58th anniversary of the historic March on Washington organized by Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. in 1963, which helped pave the way for the Civil Rights Act of 1964. A federal judge blocked an executive order from Texas Governor Greg Abbott that limited non-governmental organizations from transporting migrants from the southern border. Attorney General Merrick Garland warned the order would impede border officials' ability to contract with various groups. Civil rights groups said it would lead to racial profiling. Cole Hemstreet contributed reporting. I'm Mary Sherman for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our 8 trust indicators to support accuracy and transparency online at publicnewsservice.org.
The Minnesota Supreme Court delivers a legal blow to the opponents of Enbridge Energy's Line 3, and two federally recognized East Coast tribes plan to open cannabis mega dispensaries. With that story and more, it's Trip Krause with National Native News, the daily newscast dedicated to Indigenous news, issues, and culture.
This is National Native News. I'm Trip Krause, in for Antonia Gonzalez. On Tuesday, Minnesota Supreme Court declined to hear an appeal by opponents of the Enbridge Line 3 pipeline. In a one-page order, the state's highest court affirmed a decision in June by the Minnesota Court of Appeals to allow construction on the project to proceed. On Wednesday, hundreds gathered outside the Minnesota State Capitol to protest the Line 3 pipeline project. Activist group Roots Action posted a series of videos via Twitter. Work is finished on parts of the Enbridge pipeline that run through portions of Canada, North Dakota, and Wisconsin. Activist Winona LaDuke addressed a crowd captured in this live stream audio from Honor the Earth.
Unlike a lot of the other water protectors here facing charges in three counties, I'm not a criminal. I'm a water protector. The criminal is Enbridge.
The portion that runs through Minnesota is about 90% complete. Cannabis industry website Leafly is reporting that the Mashantucket-Pequot Tribal Nation and the Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians anticipate opening mega dispensaries next year. Connecticut legalized marijuana on July 1st, with licensed retail stores expected to open next summer. And the Mashantucket-Pequot plan to open a marijuana store near Foxwoods Resort Casino in eastern Connecticut. In North Carolina, recreational and medical marijuana are illegal. The Eastern Band of Cherokee Indians plans to open a cannabis store on tribal land. One location option would be near Harris Cherokee Casino Resort. Earlier this month, the tribe voted to legalize medical marijuana on tribal land. According to the tribe's governmental affairs liaison, it would likely be the only legal cannabis dispensary within hundreds of miles. The Compassionate Care Act, which seeks to legalize medical marijuana, continues to move through the state legislature. Dillingham, Alaska's utility co-op is one of 18 utility companies around the country to receive a USDA grant to boost internet and broadband service around the country. KDLG's Tyler Thompson has more.
Nishigaag Cooperative is set to bring unlimited internet to all service areas by 2023 with help from a $16.7 million federal grant. Those communities include Aleknagik, Clark's Point, Dillingham, Ecock, Manicotic, and Portage Creek. Right now, residents in the area can only get a maximum of 300 gigabytes of bandwidth at around $180 per month. The new unlimited plans will come at no extra cost to residents. The internet will also be 10 times faster than its current speeds. CEO Bob Hemschut said the upgrade is a game changer.
The sort of capacity that can be provided by fiber connection is a complete different level from even the microwave. The microwave was a increased service level to our communities, but it is still bandwidth limited. Fiber is a permanent transport that is scalable for future needs.
The proposed route to install the fiber cable would run from the co-op's microwave antenna site in Leavelock to Ekwok, then Aleknagik to Dillingham. Those cables will also be routed from the cable plant to homes in Dillingham and Aleknagik. Nishigaag Cooperative estimates that the project will cost $24 million. The co-op will use money from the USDA grant and $6.5 million in term loan money from the National Rural Utilities Cooperative Finance Corporation, or CFC. The co-op will front the remaining $784,000 in capital assets. Reporting for KDLG in Dillingham, I'm Tyler Thompson.
The Ute Mountain Ute Tribe opened a charter school to 23 kindergarten and first grade students. The charter school building isn't finished, but officials hope to complete the work in late September. The school will embrace Ute language and culture along with learning within the fields of science, technology, engineering, and math. The school is also open to students in the area regardless of tribal affiliation, and it hopes to expand to include second through fourth grade learning next year. For National Native News, I'm Trip Krause.
COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are rising in Florida, and the federal government declares the first ever water shortage for the Colorado River. With that story and more, it's This Week in Water.
COVID leads to water cutbacks in Florida. That story and more on H2O Radio's weekly news report, I'm Jamie Sudler.
I'm Franny Halperin, and it's This Week in Water.
COVID-19 cases and hospitalizations are rising in Florida, and now the crisis is affecting water supplies.
The mayor of Orlando is asking residents to cut back on their water use because the same liquid oxygen that's needed to help coronavirus patients breathe and protect against lung damage is also used by utilities.
The city uses liquid oxygen to make ozone gas to rid water of naturally occurring organic compounds and eliminate a rotten egg smell.
The shortage of liquid oxygen across the nation is being made worse by a lack of tanker trucks and drivers.
Residents were asked to immediately stop watering their lawns and washing their cars. The city's utility wants to cut daily consumption almost in half, and if they don't, water quality could deteriorate.
In as soon as a week, there could be a system-wide boil water advisory for drinking and cooking. Orlando has already stopped irrigation at parks and ball fields, and the cutbacks might continue into September.
The federal government declared the first ever water shortage for the Colorado River on August 16th, triggering reductions to deliveries at the beginning of next year to Arizona, Nevada, and Mexico.
Farmers in Arizona will suffer the largest cutbacks. Right now, the announcement does not affect the river's upper basin states of Wyoming, Utah, New Mexico, and Colorado, but as early as next year, the Bureau could declare a shortage there.
Well, the Southwest suffers from a lack of precipitation. About a week ago, rain fell where it's not expected, on the highest point of Greenland's immense ice cap for the first time ever on record.
It rained for several hours at the National Science Foundation's summit station, 500 miles north of the Arctic Circle. Temperatures there are usually well below freezing, but remained above that mark for about 9 hours. It had been exceptionally hot all around Greenland for 3 days, about 18 degrees Celsius higher than average in some places.
If you spent time on beaches on the East Coast, you've probably seen horseshoe crabs. The creatures, which can grow up to 2 feet long and have a helmet-like shell, have existed on Earth for hundreds of millions of years and have survived 5 mass extinctions.
What's the secret to their longevity? It might be their blue blood. It contains cells that detect harmful toxins and bacteria and clot around them to protect the animal.
It's a remarkable trait that did not go unnoticed by the medical community, which since the 1970s has been using horseshoe crab blood to test drugs, biomedical devices, and vaccines, including recent ones for COVID-19, to make sure they are contaminant-free.
The creatures are collected when they come ashore to spawn and are taken to a lab where about 30% of their blood is drained. Afterward, the crabs are returned to the water, and the pharmaceutical industry claims only about 3% die.
But conservation groups argue the loss could be as high as 30%, and when combined with overfishing of the animals for bait, the result has been serious declines in the past few decades.
There is a synthetic alternative to using horseshoe crab blood that's been approved in Europe and Asia, but not yet authorized in the U.S. So for now, the crabs are helping to keep Americans alive, and perhaps one day soon, we will return the favor. And finally, do you remember the meal you had at a favorite restaurant 2 years ago? Or even what you had for dinner last Friday? If you were a cuttlefish, you probably would. Recent research led by the University of Cambridge showed the squid-like creatures can remember for their entire lives the precise details of what they ate, where, and when they gulped it down.
This type of memory is called episodic, which in humans declines over time. It's different from semantic memory, where we tuck away facts like state capitals, the location of the grocery store, or how to use a pair of scissors.
The researchers tested the memory of cuttlefish by delivering meals in certain locations in their tanks at specific times to see if they'd remember to show up, and they did.
Then the cuttlefish were offered a choice between a dull food and their favorite shrimp, getting the tastier treat if they were willing to wait. Eventually, the animals learned to postpone gratification if it meant getting the yummier meal.
This suggested the cuttlefish had formed complex episodic memories that included not only where and when they had eaten, but also if the meal was delicious.
The researchers suspect the ability of cuttlefish to retain memories even into old age helps the animals not to forget whom they mated with so they can spread their genetic code more broadly.
That's it for this week in water. Don't you forget to tune in next time.
You're listening to the KBOO Evening News for Friday, August 27th, 2021. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call or text us with your breaking news stories and tips at 971-245-2158. Our remote production team for tonight's newscast includes Josh Salem. The producer is Yasmin Kobanoglu, and our engineer is Otto. Special thanks to Trip Krause, Faven Gerezgehar, Mary Scheuerman, and Dr. Anthony Lizowitz. The director of Evening News is Althea Billings. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM. I'm Sam Bowman. Good night.